Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is June King.
And her son Peter from Wimbledon.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, thanks very much to June and son Peter for that lovely intro and for the length that we've gone to in order to record said intro, because I understand that social distancing guidelines were observed throughout that recording. So I assume some sort of throwing of recording device happened in that split second in between hearing June's voice and Peter's voice. So bravo, June and Peter, and thank you very much for your support and that lovely intro. I hope you're pleased to have had your intro used on a very significant week for tennis and the Tennis Podcast, because tennis is back. We've bounced back. We're not reliving anything this episode, David. We're just living in the sweet, sweet moment of Palermo and Fiona Ferro up against Annette Contaveit. Tennis is bouncing.
Yeah, it does feel properly like real tennis now, because this is the first time we've reviewed a tennis tournament and previewed another one with pre-tournament press conferences going on everywhere that we've been able to listen across to and chat amongst ourselves about people and look at draws. I mean, actually looking at draws is suddenly such a thrill. It feels so exotic.
One of my lockdown tasks was to organise my phone apps into really helpful folders, and I completely forgot which folder I put my ATP WTA scores app in. It took me quite a long time to hunt around to find that.
Mine seemed to shut itself down, given that it hadn't been used for 5 months. I had to reload it onto my phone.
Just a bit of rust. Mm. It was glorious to see tournaments pop up in it, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's such a defining feature of tennis happening, the ATP WTA app being full. I've kind of forgotten how to preview tennis.
Great, stay tuned, folks.
Because the WTA always send out, you know, prior to every tournament, they send out, you know, match notes, really helpful stuff and stats. And it kind of all feels quite irrelevant at the moment because, you know, the kind of, it doesn't really matter who's won the most titles this year already. There's no such thing as form at the moment. And it's all really unknown, like what are the factors going to be with how players perform?
Yeah. I mean, Fiona Ferro is going to be like the new sort of de facto world number one.
Yeah, suddenly she feels like the greatest player of all time to me, because she's 6-2-3 all against Annette Contaveit. And I did find myself looking up Fiona Ferro before this podcast to work out what she'd done before it, to see if there was any sign of this having, you know, coming about 6 months ago.
Matt thinks so.
I mean, I've gone through her exhibition results. She's unbeaten.
No, you haven't.
She's unbeaten in exhibition tennis during the lockdown. She won 10 matches.
What exhibition tennis has she been playing?
She won 10 matches arranged by the FFT. And she played and won them all, and she's carried this form into Palermo. I mean, I'm getting carried away with, you know, for form, because that's the only thing I can
well,
go
given
on.
That you've... Well, exactly. So maybe we should be looking at the players who have played a lot of exhibition tennis in this period. You know, for people that are shortly going to be having to make predictions, maybe that's something to a life raft to cling to.
Well, we have already made predictions and they've gone incredibly badly.
But they became irrelevant very, very quickly. Nobody was picking Fiona Ferro now, were they? No.
It is going to be interesting, though, isn't it, to chart the few players that have played a lot of matches over the last... And there are quite a few players, because if you think of all the exhibitions that have gone all around the world, and some of them have been publicised, some of them have been televised, some of them we've talked about, others have kind of gone by without really being noticed, but a lot of players have played a lot of tennis, and then some have hardly played any at all. And it just will be interesting to see whether that has any impact at all.
Yeah, and in terms of the tennis that's upcoming next week, we've got two events on the WTA Tour. We've got the clay court event in Prague, which is kind of headlined. The top seed there is Simona Halep. And then we've got this brand new event in Lexington, Kentucky, which is the first WTA event in the United States since last year's US Open, being headlined by Serena Williams and plenty of other notable players, Venus Williams, Victoria Azarenka, Coco Gauff, Joe Conta's there. It's a really interesting field. Unfortunately, it is called the Top Seed Open by Bluegrass Orthopedics. And I was in the Prime Video studios today for rehearsals, and I requested assurances that I wouldn't have to give the full event title on too many an occasion. And if I do have to say it a lot, I want to be getting some free orthopedics in the post, whatever they may be.
And some top seeds.
And some top seeds. I mean, if Serena Williams, the top seed, doesn't win the Top Seed Open, that's a... it's a bad look, isn't it?
The
top seed has got to win the Top Seed Open.
It's a good headline, though. Top seed has gone out of the Top Seed Open in the first round.
Yeah, how much mileage do you think I can get out of that gag next week? Tune in to find out. Prime Video from 3:20 p.m. UK time on Monday. There's a real smattering, a real mixture in both those draws of players it feels like we've seen a lot of and heard a lot from during this lockdown period, and players that it feels like kind of disappeared off the face of the planet and you sort of vaguely forgot they existed.
Yes, it's a little bit like picking up a book that you were reading 9 months ago and you're having to sort of re-familiarise yourself with the plot and the characters. Who's this again? What do they do? Except the difference is a book doesn't change when you pick it up. From 9 months, everything's the same. I feel like this, you know, the 5 month break we've had will be having an impact on results. So it's just really difficult to tell. And I feel like no results at all are going to really be that surprising. I think if the top players do well, you can put that down to, oh, they're the better players, of course they're going to do well. If they don't do so well, oh, this is a new situation, of course we're going to get upsets.
There is nothing that you would consider an upset in the current climate.
I think there are still, yes, relative upsets, but I don't know, just nothing is going to be as surprising as it would have been in normal circumstances, I think.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean,
yes, I will be surprised if Bernarda Pera beats Serena Williams in round one, but I wouldn't be as surprised as I would have been if the season had been carrying on as normal, for example.
That section of the draw in Lexington, Kentucky is extraordinary. And by section, I mean, you don't even have to go very far for it to be interesting. The top four names are Serena Williams, Bernarda Pera, who's just pleased to be there, or maybe unpleased to be in that section of the draw, depending on how you look at it. Victoria Azarenka and Venus Williams. So the winner of Azarenka and Venus Williams will face the winner of Serena Williams and Bernarda Pera.
I had to listen to the 20-minute press conference of Victoria Azarenka before we started this podcast, and it was recorded before the draw came out, and she sounded, you know, pretty jolly and, you know, optimistic, and I mean, very interesting woman to listen to anyway, I think, partly because I've always found her quite interesting, but also she's got a lot of experience behind her as a tennis player, and also kind of life experience as well. She's so much has happened to her the last 2 or 3 years with the birth of her child and the difficulties she's had with the custody of little Leo, but talking about her process of coming back into the sport now with the pandemic as it's going on and the various practical considerations for whether she travels with him and all that sort of thing. But so that was interesting to listen to. But then she was talking about tennis in general, and then this draw comes out and it is sharp intake of breath time, because imagine if you are her and you've got to beat Venus Williams, then Serena Williams, in order to get just to the quarterfinals. I mean, what a first couple of matches that is. But, you know, this is what we've been missing as people who just are glad to see tennis back.
A tough draw now feels all the more brutal given the length you have to go to just to get to a tennis tournament. I mean, it was previously a bit rubbish if you go somewhere, get a tough draw out in round one, you know, on the plane to the next place. But if you've had to quarantine or make sacrifices in terms of seeing friends, family, make compromises in your life, etc., etc., just to get to a place to be able to play tennis, to get there and be, you know, dumped out in round one or to be handed a shocker of a draw feels all the more unjust somehow. Mm.
That point that David mentioned about is like, it's cool to see these names next to each other in a draw, I think really hit home, because tennis's return has not been this big celebration that we hoped it might be a few months ago with everyone coming back in one time. It started in sort of, you know, there's been a sprinkling of WTA events. The men are starting in a couple of weeks. It's been a little patchy. And I think it's slightly disappointing in a way when you look at other sports, in the fact that, you know, football, cricket, golf, certainly the sports I'm most interested in, have kind of come back and things haven't resumed completely as normal because there's no fans and that kind of thing. But the star players are together. Yet, you know, also recognising the fact that tennis does have different challenges to those sports. But to see those names next to each other on the draw just for the first time made me really, really excited about tennis's return. I've followed a little bit of Palermo this week and it's been nice, but Kentucky feels like the bang we've been kind of waiting for a few months.
Yeah, agreed. And there's, in terms of that sort of smattering and sprinkling of differently positioned players in there, a name that caught my eye when I was looking at the draw, the list of top seed open by Bluegrass Orthopedics earlier, was Amanda Anisimova. She was one of the ones we're speculating that this could be good for, because she'd had that incredible breakthrough year last year, then went through an awful time. She lost her father, she's had injury, she was, despite her incredibly young age, going through a really sort of bit of a wilderness period where it felt like she was swimming against the tide a bit and losing ground on her young rivals. So she's somebody I'm fascinated to see play. So there are lots of different angles in that draw. Even, you know, just watching Jo Konta play will be fascinating, because she's the third seed there, and yeah, she wasn't impressive at the Battle of the Brits, was she?
Talking about the logistics involved in just getting to tournaments, etc., she also did a press conference, and she had made the decision to fly in with her coach, Dan Smethurst, for this week, and then she's got Thomas Hogstead joining the team for the first time for the New York tournaments. And she said she'd flown to Chicago, driven to Kentucky from there, and I looked that up, and it's 400 miles and 6 hours to do that. And she's got a rental car which she plans to keep with her throughout Lexington, and then she's going to go straight on in the same car to New York, which is 700 miles away and an 11-hour drive. She wants to minimise the amount of time she spends in airports and airplanes, which I completely understand. It makes a lot of sense, but that gives you an idea of the, I mean, maybe there are listeners from Australia or America that do those sort of road trips a lot more than certainly I am used to. And I know a lot of players, when they go from European country to European country, don't necessarily fly everywhere. There's a lot of driving from across mainland Europe. But that's not something she would have been doing at any other time in her career, maybe ever, certainly not since she would have been starting out. And I feel like that's it's another big consideration, isn't it? Maybe more players are going to be doing that.
Crikey. Yeah, I mean, maybe some people in the States are listening thinking that's nothing. But for Brits, those are massive drive. I mean, I don't think I've ever driven 700 miles. I don't think I've ever done a car journey of 700 miles.
No.
That sounds dreadful. I hope she's with somebody that has the same music taste as her, the same air conditioning policy as her, and the same frequency of pit stop policy as her.
Yeah.
Because if not, then that sounds like an anxiety dream.
The onus is on you, Dan Smethurst. You've got to come up with the goods.
I remember I did a road trip up to Sheffield with one of my best friends to visit another friend of ours, and I was driving. She didn't have a driving license at the time, and at the start of the journey I said, well, you've got to keep me entertained. If I'm driving all this way, you've got to keep me entertained. And she only told me this 10 years later. She said it's given her a complex for the past 10 years, that she just crumbled under the pressure and she couldn't think of any conversation topics. And we ended up listening to an audio book of Matilda by Roald Dahl because she was unable to think of anything interesting to say.
Did it spark further conversation? Or because one thing I've noticed with things like that is, do you listen and then have offshoot chat, or do you just sit and listen? Because I've noticed that in certain company, if I'm watching a film or TV, I am just wanting to basically watch what's going on, and sometimes the other person wants to chat about it. Hence, I'm missing some of what's going on.
Okay, you can chat about it as long as you pause the content while you're chatting. These are all things that Jo needs to discuss with her companions before getting on the road, though, because these are flashpoints.
Well, she's already done one road trip, so I'm presuming it went well, because otherwise she would have perhaps abandoned the road trip idea.
I might be interviewing her in the week, so these will be my priority questions.
Yes.
Tune in to Prime Video to hear the answers. So that's Jo Konta. Who else have we heard from in terms of pre-tournament press conferences in Kentucky? I think we've all listened to the Serena press conference.
Yeah.
Matt, you joined it live.
She was the first
I had a brief moment where I thought my life had ended because I thought I had joined that press conference accidentally live in my bathroom. But it turned out it hadn't started yet. They'd sent the Zoom link through and I just idly clicked on it. Luckily, it was a Zoom link for the future.
Yes, but I can confirm
there was about...
I was on that Zoom call and you in the bathroom did not appear to the world media.
There was about a second and a half where I thought, all right, well, my life and my career is over now. Like, there's no coming back from this.
I mean, I should say, I did actually want to mention how well I think the WTA have organised their press conferences over the last 2 days. These are virtual Zoom press conferences. And I mean, I've run a couple of them, but I was kind of making it up as I went along. I think I did a reasonable job. What they had done is clearly gone through a workshop of how are we going to do this? Who's going to be in the room? Will they be muted or not? Will, you know, videos be on? And they'd got all the guidelines. People weren't necessarily coming on time because these are tennis players. I think Serena came about 45 minutes early out of nowhere.
But they're communicating that to the media really well. The channels of communication have been great.
They have. And it was just... I mean, it was just really impressive and it worked well. It gave us all access to talk to these players and get these stories that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So well done to them for a start. There was a good 40 people in that virtual press conference with Serena, wasn't there? And I mean, apart from what she's put out herself on Instagram and various other social media channels, that's the first I've heard of her in a kind of interview scenario with people able like us to ask her questions. And she seems really up for it and ready. I mean, didn't she say she's planning to play everything, including the French Open?
Yep, that's exactly what she said. She said she intends to play it all if she can. She made two really interesting points, I thought. The first was about the virus in general and her situation. She stressed that she has been really, really careful and even used the word neurotic to describe her attitude to keeping safety measures, because obviously she's had pulmonary embolism and blood clots in the past, and she said, I don't have full lung capacity and I'm not sure what would happen if I get the virus and I don't want to find out. So she said she's been just staying at home, social distancing very early.
She's been in a Serena bubble.
Was the word she used.
I think I'm going to rename my bubble. I didn't realise I was allowed to name it after myself, but now that I know that...
I think you might have to have 23 slams or something.
Hey, I make the rules.
my bubble, my rules.
Yeah, it's up to you whether you join it, but, you know... Anyway, sorry,
well,
Matt.
Patrick Mouratoglou has joined it, taking how many flights from Europe? Four flights.
About 4,000 flights, yeah. It looked like. I mean, it stressed me out so much looking at that itinerary that he posted.
He flew from Nice to Paris, Paris, I think, to New York, New York to Detroit, and Detroit to Kentucky.
Oof. Yeah.
Hand me the keys to the car. It just sounds dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a bad journey in normal times.
Mm.
And she's had this court built at her home, Serena, with the US Open surface. And then the second point she made that I thought was interesting is whether she thinks the fact that she's taken breaks in the past will benefit her with this break, particularly because everyone has had to take a break. Normally, she's coming back to the tour and people are still max sharp. And she's been debating in her mind whether she thinks actually this could be a situation where she might be at an advantage because she's used to having long breaks. She normally doesn't play certainly the last few years, she hasn't played between the US Open and the start of the new season. So I think it strikes me that she sees this as an opportunity and her time to finally get 24, and it starts with this tournament in Kentucky. And if she can build herself up, there are going to be some players missing from the US Open field. It's going to be slightly weaker. And I don't know, I think the fact that she committed so early to all these events, despite her wariness regarding the virus, is an indicator that you know, she it's a cliche, but she is there to win these events, and she probably thinks she has a good chance of doing so as well.
How could she not think this is her time? I mean, she has to. If this isn't her time, I'm not sure when her time is. And it's not definitely her time. We don't know what kind of shape she's been. She says she hasn't been pumping iron. She did a bicep kiss and told us that her guns were God-given, all given to her by her mother's wonderful genes. There were a couple of slightly odd moments in the press conference, I thought. I mean, I'm sympathetic with her. She's a star that transcends the sport, and I'm sure she's conscious that anything she says on coronavirus is potentially quotable. And that must be a very uncomfortable position to be in, especially when, you know, it's such a knotty issue covering so many different topics in which none of us are experts. But she talked about the pandemic being a really great moment for tech and having a lot of investment in tech and that being really great, which was a sort of, okay, that's nice. Let's all move on from that kind of moment. And then there was also a moment where she went on to say, I don't need to be here. I've got everything I could want. And I sort of thought, if you had everything, it's actually kind of the opposite, isn't it? If you had everything you want, you wouldn't be in Kentucky. You wouldn't, as you said, Matt, you wouldn't be taking what is, it's a managed risk, but it is a risk. Mm. Because she wants 24, and why wouldn't she? This is an immense opportunity for her, and I'm so glad she is in Kentucky because it's a fantastic story. Her being there makes it a fantastic and intriguing week.
It's a weird one for the city of Kentucky as well, because this is the first time they're getting WTA tennis, you know, these renowned stars, which is only happening because of the pandemic, and yet there are no fans able to go because of the pandemic. It's kind of this strange situation, but obviously Serena being there just gives it such star power, and it'll be on Tennis Channel throughout the week, and we can watch you on Prime presenting it, Catherine.
The top seed open by Bluegrass Orthopedics.
That's the one. Yeah,
rolls right off the tongue. In terms of star power, I would say that Coco Gauff's presence almost rivals Serena. Not quite, but almost. Discuss.
I would say not, but I do feel that with every month that passes, she becomes a bigger star. And, I mean, her tennis alone has made us all sit up and take notice over the last year, and it's not just what she did at Wimbledon. Every stage, it feels like she's backed it up. But the way she has stood up as a voice in the times that we are currently in has just been extraordinary anyway. And the way she spoke in her press conference today was mind-blowing to me. She's just got such poise about pretty much any question anybody asks her. And she was asked a couple of times about her letting her voice be heard over the last few months, and she was very forthcoming in discussing it. She said she'd been contacted by Andrea Petkovic because she was asked whether she felt like she'd influenced other players and helped to educate other players about Black Lives Matter. She said she was approached by Andrea Petkovic and has been so by many other players as well. And I was thinking, you know, this is I don't even know if she was 16 when she was voicing her thoughts. And I just find it incredible, really, the way she's every stage that she's come across so far in her career and in the life, at least, that we are hearing about from her, she just seems to be able to handle it. And I just can't relate to that at an age of 16.
I mean, half of her questions in the press conference today were not about tennis. They were about issues of social justice, and the way she talks with so much knowledge. And she also made the point that she's doing more than just talking. She's very aware that she's playing in Kentucky this week, which is where the African-American woman Breonna Taylor was fatally shot back in March, and none of the officers involved have faced any criminal charges. And she said that she's been, you know, signing petitions and emailing the police department and encouraging other people to do that so that there is some justice for that. And it's impossible not to just be so impressed with Coco Gauff, both obviously when she plays tennis, but I think even more so the way she, as you said, has emerged as this voice. And she said, I've done these things because I felt like I should. I felt like I would be doing the wrong thing if I wasn't using my platform. And to have that perspective and that world awareness at 16 will never not blow me away, really.
Plus, she also said that the speech that she'd given back in June, the one that was so widely shared on social media, I assumed that was done with some preparation, and I think that was the general assumption because that's how it came across. It was so well handled at the time, and she says she got approached 2 minutes before it and agreed and just spoke off the cuff, and well. Again, blown away.
It's not relatable for mortals like us, is it?
And I mean, look, I don't know how this relates ultimately in the long term to how she will handle her career on the court. But I mean, she also talked about how she was just working on a game in the months that have gone by, and that's another really interesting element to what players bounce out of this hiatus like, is who has worked on the game and actually made an adjustment and an improvement that you can actually see. And she was adamant that she had worked on her aggression on the court and her taking the ball early and moving forward and working on a second serve. And I just sort of thought, well, you know, I am starting to get convinced that this young woman is going to be maybe even better than I thought.
Working on her second serve is a fearsome prospect, because her second serve was already a barnstormer.
Mm. Yeah,
She faces a qualifier in round one with the potential to meet Arina Sabalenka in round two. Sabalenka has got Madison Brengel in the first round. Also, that section of the draw, round one clash between Ons Jabeur, who of course was on the run of her career before lockdown. She's somebody that must feel has been hit pretty hard in tennis terms. Must feel some sense of injustice at what's happened. Obviously, everybody does, but just purely in tennis terms, she takes on Katie McNally in the first round. That is a match that I want to watch. Katie McNally, if you're thinking, oh, that's a name that rings a bit of a bell, she impressed at the US Open last year. I think won a round and ended up facing Serena and taking a set off her, and just really dazzling people. She's almost a little bit of a throwback kind of tennis player, but with power as well. She's really eye-catching, and that will be an eye-catching match, I think. And she's young as well, Katie McNally. I think she was 17 last year's US Open, so doing some basic math, probably 18 now.
Yes,
well done, me.
I think it was McNally and Goff's doubles partnership at the US Open last year, Catherine. And I'm sorry to bring this up, when you said that your age was higher than their combined age. And you found that to be irritating.
Yes. Now, hang on. That won't always be the case, is it? Because their combined age will increase at twice the rate that my age will. Yes. So it's possible that is already not the case, which would be personally great.
Will they catch me at any point?
we'll do the maths on that, David. Find out how long you have to live for that to be the case.
Interesting you mention Sabalenka. I was interested to read a line on the WTA website that she and Tursunov are no longer working together. I mean, that's been one of the more strange coaching arrangements anyway, with its ups and downs, but yeah, apparently they have.
Has there been an Instagram post about taking someone to hospital?
Disappointingly, no.
Right.
It's just been buried on the WTA website with just a single bullet point.
their previous split as a coaching partnership was one of my favourite social media incidents in sporting history. Just a stream of consciousness from Arina Sabalenka, who's like a really crap Taylor Swift song. With no melody.
And then she didn't delete it or edit it.
She
just left it there.
Nope. She thought, yep, that is an accurate representation of, of my views and what happened. Deserves to stay on that very, very public platform. And then they sort of got back together a week or so later, didn't they? But, I mean, that's obviously been a very turbulent relationship for reasons I'm not privy to, and I know she has latterly struggled a bit, but he, you know, on aggregate was an immensely positive influence on her, and she does strike me as somebody that needs a coach and needs a guiding voice in her ear, and I wonder who that will end up being now for her.
Well,
who's on the market?
Her career does veer, doesn't it? I mean, I know we've only got a couple of years worth of evidence so far, but there have been some pretty dramatic shifts in momentum, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see what sort of career she ends up having. I feel like with a lot of the players that are around at the moment, I feel quite confident about maybe a player's future and as to what that will end up being. But Sabalenka's, she could be a Grand Slam champion, or she could get nowhere near in the future.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
The top seed in Prague this week, that's an event on clay, is Simona Halep. She did pre-tournament press, didn't she? Nothing of major note other than her comments about whether or not she intends to play the US Open, which there's been a lot of speculation about over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, she stressed that she hasn't yet made her decision on the US Open, but said that the conditions are really tough for her. And personally, I would be surprised if she played the US Open. She's not talking like someone who has much intention of going there.
Anything else of note, Matt, from the Prague press conferences this weekend?
The only other one I caught was Eugenie Bouchard, who spoke quite openly about how she's hoping this could, in a way, be a fresh start. She's incredibly aware of the fact that her career has nosedived in the last few years with very few actual sort of highs. We have some people whose career are just up and down, like Sabalenka, for example, but Bouchard, from that height she hit in 2014, since then there've been occasional good results, but really a result rather than even a week or a string of results. And she said that she's hopeful that possibly having 5 months to pause, reflect, could be a time for a fresh start. And her injury worries are beside her. I think she was injured at the start of the season. She had a wrist injury. She's put that beside her. That's better now. So she's had a chance to actually work on her body and her fitness and get herself in shape, which she hasn't been for quite a while as well. So, she's talking quite positively, but I don't know, this small event in Prague on the clay doesn't really seem like the sort of event that we would associate Bouchard with. She when she has had her good results, they've often been in big tournaments, and she's kind of been an occasion riser.
She won't be playing the US Open. She's not getting a wild card into the US Open for obvious reasons, given that there was that massive lawsuit that that she fought and won a huge settlement from after she fell in the locker room and hit her head at the US Open some years ago. And actually somebody pointed out her as an example of perhaps one of the reasons that the US Open has come out with such a watertight sounding clause in what we've read today on social media, unofficially, I should add, but players have been sharing details of the kind of thing that players are needing to sign in order to go to the US Open and play in terms of a waiver.
Unofficial reports, as you very rightly point out, David, this is leaked and it is not by any means confirmed, but there are unofficial reports that the wording in the waiver that players are required to sign to compete in the US Open includes the wording, "I voluntarily assume full responsibility for any risks, including death, that may be sustained by me or by others who come into contact with me as a result of my presence in the facilities, whether caused by the negligence of the NTC or otherwise." That's the National Tennis Centre, the NTC. So pretty much all litigation bases covered there. And obviously, you know, that's incredibly strong wording. It would make anyone think extremely carefully, if they weren't already. I'm sure most were, but would think very carefully about their decisions. But, you know, it's a nation of litigation, isn't it, the US? It's no surprise, I suppose, that it's the wording in a waiver is bulletproof like that. You mentioned the wild cards. There was a fanfare about the announcement of wild cards for Kim Clijsters on the women's side and Andy Murray on the men's side. Murray was the next direct entrant on the list, so it was kind of a redundant announcement that he would be given a wild card because there were obviously going to be pullouts. He only needed one to get in, and he already has got in. So there's a wild card up for grabs, David, is what that means.
Yeah, I mean, so far we've had withdrawals for Ash Barty, Alina Svitolina, Kiki Bertens, Gael Monfils, Stan Wawrinka. I'm wondering how far down you'd have to go before I might be under consideration.
Well, further down than Matt Roberts, I'd say.
Hey, hold on, I've been getting better. Just maybe not US Open better. Actually, just on another note about you're talking about Serena, whether this is the time, and if not now, when? Well, as you say, when you reel those names off, three of the world's top 10 already not going to play, and Simona Halep, the world number two, looking likely not to play. I mean, I know the view is, and it's a view I've always held, that maybe until the last year or so, that if Serena plays her best tennis, she wins. I'm not sure I believe that anymore completely, but certainly there are fewer players on paper there to trip her up.
Other wildcards, just to whiz you through them, Brandon Nakashima, 19-year-old American. Cece Bellis, former world junior number one. She's had a horrible time, Cece Bellis, with injuries. She's 21 now, 304 in the world. Ulysses Blanche, great name, 22 years old, never heard of her. Him, never heard of him.
He sounds like he should be playing a part in the OC.
No, he sounds like he should be a great philosopher. Either way, both great careers.
And a tennis player.
I'm just whizzing through to see if there's anybody else that people might have heard of. Maxime Cressy, that's another great name. 23-year-old. Francesca Di Lorenzo, American 23-year-old. Sebastian Korda. And yes, there is a reason why you know that name, because he is the son of Peter Korda, the former Australian Open champion, and Caroline Dolhide. We've heard of her, haven't we? She's been around. Yeah, okay.
We've just had a result, Catherine, in Palermo.
A few others as well. Yeah, tennis, actual tennis. The new world number one is Fiona Ferro.
Yeah, she could be a threat to Serena at the US Open.
She's unbeaten. She'd be more or less leading the race if there was a race two anywhere.
She's a dominant force.
Yeah, Fiona Ferro has just beaten Annette Contaveit 6-2, 7-5 from a break down in the second set as well.
Tell us everything, Matt, we need to know about tennis's new superstar.
Well, she's playing without a clothing sponsor. So we've talked about sponsoring a player before. Perhaps this is the player.
Matt's got a little twinkle in his eye when he talks about Fiona Ferro. He thinks he's talent spotted here.
Well, she's better than I thought she was. Have you heard that before?
I think career high ranking 52, I think.
Yes, and this is her second career title. She won in Lausanne last year. She's coached by Emmanuel Plonk, who I know from Luca Puy coaching.
From Luca Puy days.
Yeah, and I think Lodra and Santoro in the past as well. So, you know.
Another great name.
She is rising. Let's leave it at that, perhaps. But actually,
Ferro rising.
She's quite understated, and I think she's the sort of player who knows her limits and will be one of those kind of maximisers.
My word, the Palermo Trophy is absolutely massive. It looks like the FA Cup in football. I mean, it's enormous silver trophy with huge handles and a big lid. It's inevitably going to come off.
On my screen, I've got a man giving a speech with a surgical mask under his chin, like a sort of helmet strap.
Yes.
Which I don't think is officially the way that's supposed to be worn.
We're like all learning about mask etiquette at the moment, aren't
like
we?
Like a stirrup. They've all had to put masks on for the ceremony. Oh, it's awful, isn't it? There's no point in pretending it's not ghastly.
It's also weird, and we're trying to dine out on the fact that we're reviewing tennis and previewing it again, but it's all so weird.
Yeah, well, I hate the socially distanced formations that you get on a court where people look like, you know, they're about to do a flash mob. But actually, they're just somberly standing there in masks, looking lonely.
Masks are quite good if you lose the final, though. You don't have to bother with gracious loser face.
You can cry into your mask.
Yeah.
Tell you what, though, well done, Palermo, for getting through this tournament and being the first main tour event back. They've managed to have 350 people in the stands each, or certainly in the latter couple of days. I mean, it was pretty quiet in the first few days, but and some great matches. Camilla Giorgi fighting back, two match points down against Diana Yastremska. I mean, you have never seen aggression from two tennis players like that. But I mean, the you know what they're like, Yastremska and Giorgi. Both of them absolutely teeing off on everything, even shots that you're supposed to defend off. And it was great. And Giorgi just hit the most wondrous backhand cross-court winner on return when she was match point down, and eventually came back and won. But yeah, I mean, it's, look, let's hope there's not an outbreak in Palermo that or anybody else gets test positive. There was just that one positive test, I think, right on the eve of the tournament, but I haven't heard of any other since. So, you know, good for them that they've got through the event.
Yeah, hear. Help me out here, Matt. What is the deal now, in all seriousness, with rankings? What happens to Fiona Ferro?
She can gain points. However, players will not be losing points. So it's quite difficult to progress forward. You would have to sort of gain quite a lot. Because points are not dropping off for the people in front, which is as much a reason why people move up as the fact that they themselves gain points.
Right, so she'll have to win the US Open to really, really gain her status as the world number one, where she clearly belongs.
Possibly even more.
And Nadal won't lose his winner's points, will he, at the US Open?
Correct.
So it's all so weird, isn't it? Have we got anything else in terms of tennis, live tennis, before we bring you just a wee nugget of Federer sort of news? I don't want to overtrail it, but it is an interesting little nugget. But have we got any other business from actual live tennis from this week or next or US Open? Any other business, folks?
The only other thing that I read of small interest to me, something that I didn't know, was something that Serena Williams said in her People magazine interview about how badly she's suffered with migraines over the years. And she said that had really amplified and multiplied during the period of lockdown, when she, because of all the reasons Matt said about her kind of pre-existing conditions, that she needed to really isolate herself, and she had done so. And she said she found the migraines had got a lot worse. And she was also plugging a treatment that she says she'd been taking for it, and has made it all better in this interview. But you know, I'm lucky enough not to have suffered with migraines in my life, but I think you have, Catherine, and I know my wife has, and I just don't know how tennis players would be able to function, really, in those conditions.
No, it's completely debilitating. I mean, there's no question, really, of trying to force yourself to do anything when you've got a migraine. It's game over. I'm in bed until this passes.
She was saying actually that it is one of those things that when you've got it, it's very difficult to give that as a reason for why maybe you've got to pull out of a tournament or something like that, because you can't see a knee brace or something.
No, and some people just think, oh, it's a bad headache, you know, push on through. It is a bad headache, but a bad headache can be utterly debilitating. I hope that improves for her. Right, I've trailed it. So shall we drop our little bit of a Federer bomb? He turned 39 years old this week. He's not going to be playing any tennis in the foreseeable future, so we thought this was as good a time as any to bring you this little nugget from an interview that David did with his childhood hero and former coach, Stefan Edberg. We have long speculated about the timing, and not just us, everybody has long speculated about the timing and manner of Federer's retirement, when it comes, and we hope it doesn't come for a while, but, you know, he's 39, it's coming. And it was something, David, that you asked Stefan Edberg about, because, of course, Stefan Edberg famously completed a farewell tour of the world to say goodbye before his retirement. And that is something we've speculated that Federer might emulate. And this is what Stefan Edberg had to say.
We actually talked a little bit about it, and I would not recommend it to anybody, actually, even if it's a nice thing to do, because it does put too much pressure on yourself, and there'll be too many things going on in your mind. So, if you're going to announce it, I would do it, you know, just before, you know, my last tournaments or anything, or have it in my mind, but not for anybody else to know. It's just very tough to handle, but at the same time it was a very memorable year, but I would not recommend it.
I think that's a bit of a bombshell, actually, because I think that theory of Federer retirement was one of the front runners of how he might do it, and I think that effectively takes it off the table. I think for somebody that Federer respects and is as similar to in a lot of ways as Stefan Edberg, I don't think he would listen to that advice and go against it.
I think there are two things that really strike me about it. One is that they've actually talked about it. You know, that Roger Federer has sought his advice, because I don't think Stefan Edberg would be offering that up without being asked. But has been, you know, has given his view that this would be what I would do. I wouldn't do that because I've done it. So that's interesting in itself. It's not surprising to think that Federer's mind has already gone to that point whenever it comes. But you're right. I think we've had this debate on the podcast in years gone by. I mean, probably 10 years ago we had it for the first time. But I definitely thought that would be something that might be something he'd like to do, you know, to say goodbye to all the areas of the tour that he's enjoyed. And, you know, nobody embraces the life and the attention like Federer does. And I don't say that in a critical way. I just know how much he loves the sport. But I take Stefan's point, and I do remember being around Stefan Edberg when he was going on that tour. The first time I ever met him was 1996, his final year. At the Queen's tournament, he played the final against Boris Becker, and yeah, he was getting presented with a new decanter or trophy or something every single time he went to a tournament, and he was getting lovely affection from the crowds. But you could see how much it was taking out of him, just emotionally, to keep having to say goodbye all the time.
I really agree that he wouldn't have asked Stefan Edberg if he wasn't intending to consider what he had to say, and Edberg's word to Federer is maybe not quite gospel, but certainly something he's going to listen to and pay a lot of attention to. Do you think there's any chance that what you say there about Federer being the kind of guy who has dealt with the attention very well, it's possible that, okay, for him, the fanfare would be ramped up even more than it was for Stefan Edberg, but would he be able to deal with it better than Stefan Edberg just because of his personality? Or do you think that actually it would be overwhelming even for Federer?
I think it's very well put. That was the other point I was thinking about myself. They are very different people. Although Federer does revere Edberg and he was his idol, Edberg's shy. He doesn't really like the limelight particularly. He kind of grew to learn how to deal with it in order to play his best tennis, but Federer loves it. I mean, he absolutely loves being the center of attention. And I think he plays his best when everybody's looking at him. So he might be able to, you know, it might even make him play better.
But who enjoys saying goodbye? Nobody.
If you know you've got to, if you know,
yeah,
the
but
end
not
is coming.
Over, and it's like Groundhog Day over and over and over again. But I mean, I'm obviously quite a different person to Roger Federer.
Yeah, I mean,
but I can't imagine anything worse.
If you were to think about any player that enjoys the travel and enjoys the circuit and enjoys the things that end up grinding tennis players down aside from injuries, he doesn't seem to suffer from any of those things. I think if Roger Federer's body didn't age, I don't think he'd ever leave.
No, but I think what concerns me about it is the feeling that I don't think he'll want the tournaments and the matches to have a sort of testimonial feel about them. If he's playing a tournament, he wants to win that tournament. And I think if you're on a farewell tour and you know that someone's waiting backstage during all your matches with a cake or some sort of plaque or, you know, something to honour your final time at that tournament, it takes on a different feel. It does take on a slightly exhibition-y testimonial feel, and I'm not sure that's desirable.
I don't think he'd do it unless he thought he could still be winning those tournaments. I just don't.
That's my point.
But my point is that I think if he did it next year, I think he would still feel that he can win the tournaments and say goodbye.
Okay. I would find the certain knowledge of a backstage cake very distracting in my quest to win a tennis match.
I mean, he's made it very clear he had no real interest in playing behind closed doors. And this break and the uncertain future of tennis events might be another thing which informs his decision to retire or how to retire. You know, however he does it, he's not going to want to go out in front of an empty stadium.
Gosh. That's an eerie thought, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because there was that video of one of the most haunting sports videos I've ever seen of Tiger Woods being introduced at the PGA Championship this week, and for some reason they still have an announcer, and they announce all the players onto the tee, and they said on the tee, Tiger Woods. and it's just a silence like that.
It was too dystopian for my taste. Mm. It was, yeah, haunting. And just at that moment, David's light has gone out and he looks like he's featuring in a horror movie as well.
But you know, it made me think, as I look at Fiona Ferro holding the enormous silver trophy in some little blue rubber gloves.
Oh, gosh.
Which is also weird.
Like Melania wore for the inauguration.
Yeah. The Tiger Woods reception at the start and announcement at the start of the tournament made me suddenly think of Serena Williams holding Grand Slam title number 24 inside an empty 23,000-seat stadium at the US Open.
Oh, it's all a lovely thought, isn't it? Yeah. Yay, tennis is back. Ah, I hope you've enjoyed that episode. Enjoy the Top Seed Open. The Top Seed Open by Bluegrass Orthopaedics.
Tell you what, they should be sponsoring this.
Yeah, Fiona Ferro and Bluegrass Orthopaedics need to, hand us a brown envelope. Okay. Hope you've enjoyed. We're getting back in the swing of talking about actual tennis. Wrap it up.
We're really not used to the live stuff, folks. We're just used to like watching old matches and reminiscing. Talking to someone else to do all the content.
Enjoy the tennis. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.